Okay. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the May 26th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Houseman. Novick. Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Welcome, everyone. Glad you're here. This is a good day. So let's take up the first of these good items, meaning 565.
565. Establish a new Portlanders Policy Commission.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, and thank you to both of my colleagues for being here. Commissioner Novick is on vacation, and Commissioner Saltzman filed an absence. So we are here, and we have three, so we can proceed to inaugurate this new commission, and I'm very grateful to everybody who's been a part of this work over many years now. It's been since 2011 when we established the Office of Equity and Human Rights and first started the New Portlanders Policy Council. There's been a lot of great work done. That council, of course, was formed to advise the Office of Equity and Human Rights and has done some wonderful work in that regard. Then Mayor Hales, having been in charge of both the Office of Equity and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, moved the New Portlanders Council into Neighborhood Involvement, which is appropriate, showing the level of engagement that we're now moving not only to advising the city, but also to coordinating community engagement within the community, the many communities of Portland. So as that work has developed, the council has been asking next steps. What's the logical progression? And I and the mayor agrees that the next step is to form a formal commission. We hear from many people at budget hearings that it's really important to listen to all Portlanders, and I appreciate every one of you who's participated in any of our city hearings. We've had some wonderful conversations and a lot of participation on boards and commissions, and this, again, also builds on the diversity and civic leadership program that's been going in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement for many years. And I need to just stop right at the beginning and acknowledge Mayor Tom Potter, who's joined us today, and all of his work while he was mayor, which really is the foundation for what the city that we are today and the inclusion that we see today. So thank you, Mayor Potter, for joining us, and First Lady, former First Lady Karen Hansen, thank you. So the new Portland Policy Council has a strategic plan developed in 2014, which calls for a permanent citywide immigrant and refugee commission. And I support this request, of course. I myself am an immigrant. I've been in Portland for 30 years now, in the United States since 1979. Estimates vary between 1 in 5 and 1 in 8 Portlanders were born in another country. I don't like to use the word foreign. You know, it sounds like I used to be a temporary resident alien. Was the first tax return that I filed as a temporary resident alien. I felt like maybe I'd come from Mars or something, but there I was just working away at my little job. So I'm not an alien and I'm not foreign. I am someone who was born overseas and is now Portland is my home, and now Portland is all of our home. And we need to look at how are we going to work together as traditional Portlanders, as Native Americans who have been here for time immemorial, and now the new folks who come tomorrow, as well as the folks who came like I did 30 years ago or anywhere from birth to now. This action signifies the city's ongoing commitment to being inclusive and to recognizing that we are stronger when we all work together and when all voices are heard, and that at our peril should we leave people out, because that's not going to work. It hasn't worked in the past, and now is the time to change. So with that, I'd like to invite up Linda Castillo and Lee Pocha, the current co-chairs of the New Portlanders Policy Council, and they will guide the process from then on.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Council Commissioners and esteemed community that we have with us. My name is Linda Castillo, and I work at Latino Network, and I just wanted to also share that recently I was confirmed as a commissioner on the Commission of Hispanic Affairs, which is really exciting. But I'm really honored here to serve as co-chair along with Mr. Lee Pocha and our New Portlander policy partners. Together from the New Portlanders Council, we've been working diligently to foster partnerships with the city bureaus and advise on integration policy and provide civic engagement practice and technical assistance to the various bureaus, while providing learning and healing and mutual engagement in community building opportunities. So I'm delighted today that we'll share more of what we've learned about our diverse and rich immigrant and refugee communities and the work with the city bureaus. So I'm happy to be a part of that, to share that with you today. To support the rationale for transitioning our advisory body from council to a citywide policy commission. In this process, we have been appreciative of your questions and your recommendations and the support shown by you and your very talented staff. And so now I'll pass the baton, so to speak, to Mr. Lee to share his thoughts with us and walk us through today's agenda.
Thank you, Linda. First, let me thank Commissioner Fritz for your great leaderships, and as well as Mayor Hales and City Board of Commissioners for allowing your staff to work with the New Portlander Policy Council for the last, couple of years at least, right after our strategic plan, which Commissioner Fritz alluded to. And, without your staff support, we would not get to this point. And so I just wanted to really express our gratitude and appreciation for, those staff that had been working hard to help us to really craft the ordinance, language and looking into creating this immigrants or refugee or the new Portland policy commission. Second, I'd like to also thank you for, giving some level of funding to work with the council to further the study of the Coalition of Community of Color Research, and indeed for Portland State and Dr. Ann Curry Stevens to further our research study on the immigrants or refugee community when it comes to challenge and issue facing this newcomers. And so with that, I thank you. The ideas of creating a commission has been a collective desire of all immigrants and refugee community, including API, Latino, Africans, and Slavics, and the great leadership from our city bureau as well. By design, it would be very inclusive for our community to come together. And the other piece is that this structure would truly enable our immigrants and refugee community leaders to exercise democracy and to promote proactive action-driven responses rather than continuing to be reactive. This commission will indeed be entering to a very critical strategic idea that the council has, and including our community, has come together to really say that in order for us to continue to provide something successful, representing our city and also our community, having a structure like a commission would truly enhance that vehicle. And so this commission will mutually benefit our city and the growing immigrants and refugee community. And so the beneficial part is that I think if we love our city, right, this is our city, even though we're newcomer, but it is our city, we need to be able to also help our city to do a better job in responding to the needs and to the critical challenges that facing our immigrants and refugee community. The mutual benefit is also that to the community, because we can have such a vehicle that would represent and would speak for the needs and be the voice and be the vehicle that would be both the city can actually voice their concern, they can help us to work together to troubleshoot and problem solve issues that are facing our newcomer community, or vice versa. And so by doing so, this is going to be a very critical structure and will provide that solid structure for both the city and our community going forward. The one piece that we do not want to see repeated again in the future is that we used to personally, I have worked and worked with this community for the last 30 years, and so I have seen many great ideas, starting from Mayor Iavency all the way to, you know, how many mayor now, Mayor Hill. I think many of you have great ideas, but a lot of time, those of us who are citizens, we saw those great ideas gone with you when you're done with your term. And we don't want to see that happen again. So by creating such a structure, you will make sure that those great ideas and, you know, great structure will continue on in serving the city and the community. So with that, I just wanted to really urge you to, support the commissions and your, you know, strong considerations in approving this commission so that we can look at it as a critical structure that would benefit the city and our community, as a whole. So thank you very much at this point in time. I'd like to just pass on to Alberto to continue to facilitate our discussion. So Alberto, thank you.
Thank you both. Good afternoon, Alberto. How are you?
Mayor, I'm well, thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. It's lovely to be here with you. Thank you for receiving this beautiful group of community members. I couldn't think of a better group of folks to be in community with, so thank you for receiving us. My name is Alberto Moreno. I am the chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and just as pleased as Ms. Castillo is to be joining my commission, I am delighted to have her join the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. My role here is simple. I am going to try to bring some grace to this process and bring folks up here who have expertise, who have tremendous passion, and care about this issue deeply. And so that's the simplicity of my role here today. And we're going to walk through this agenda. So we appreciate your time, and we appreciate you being part of this conversation. We're going to ask Professor Ann Curry Stevens to come up, and she's going to provide some context for us. She's going to review with you the New Portlander study, an executive summary, and key points. Those are included in your packet, by the way. And then she'll be followed by some additional guests who will speak to other pieces of this agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alberto.
Welcome, Dr. Stevens.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm delighted to be here today and to share with you an early glimpse at a major report that we have coming out. It's similar in terms of its scope to the other Unsettling Profile series we've done in the past, but what's new about it is it's much more asset-based. It is much more of a functional affirmation, both by way of the evidence as well as by way of the tenor of the report, to give us a glimpse into the lives of our various newcomer communities. We anticipate the report will be published in about 2 weeks. We're at the tail end of review processes. And it's covering a range of topics, including, and I want to give attention to two key parts of that report. The first is the myths and myth-busting chapter. There is a very deeply evidence-based rooting of opposition to some of the dominant myths, and we believe it will arm you, it will equip you in a fairly robust way to deal with some of the discourses, some of the myths that are out there about our communities. The second is to draw your attention to, we had the ability to do 5 chapters on smaller immigrant and refugee communities to shed light on their lives, their arrival conditions, the types of challenges they face, the types of assets they bring. And we believe that those will be followed in the coming years with additional glimpses into the lives of other newcomer communities. We hope these... Sometimes it's a little too hard to ask people to read the whole report, and so those pieces we really hope will, for anybody serving those communities, will be an important set of insights. So what I'm going to do is to share with you some of the key findings, a couple of the highlights of various chapters, and then to wrap up with some of the recommendations. So to begin, I'd like to talk about the arrival conditions of our newcomers. So newcomers arrive into the U.S. to some degree anticipating the land of milk and honey. certainly a sense of real optimism and excitement around what this land can offer to them and can offer to their children particularly. And unfortunately, when we do not tap into the assets that they bring, we don't provide inclusive pathways, there is a deflation of that sense of excitement. And so that early learning of being an untapped resource becomes quite palpable. And then as the years go on, there can be an experience where many in the community experience the same kinds of statistical outcomes, the same kind of data as other communities of color. And so we end up seeing a diminishment of health and well-being. And so we really have this need for a welcoming environment, and the title of the report is In Need of a Long Welcome. And we really do need that supportive culture and resources to make that welcome real and to manifest all of those assets. Couple of brief points on data. This is not like our other reports. I'm just covering a few of the highlights. So the disparities are stark. In comparison with the white community, the immigrant and refugee community earns $15,000 less a year on average in households. The poverty rate is 2.5 times higher. This is a community overarchingly that's employed in low-pay sectors, and the education and attainment level is a high level that haven't finished high school at 1/3 as opposed to 1 in 14 with the white non-Latino community. The next couple of slides I'm going to share with you speak to what are the consequences of not tapping these assets. Yes.
The educational attainment section caught my attention because one of the things we also find is highly educated immigrants that are unable to get into the career tracks that they left as refugees or immigrants. So how do you square, and so are doing jobs that are sort of out of classification.
Absolutely.
So how do you square that with the finding on high school diplomas and educational achievement?
So it's sort of a bipolar distribution. So we have a high level at the high end and a high level at the low end.
Okay.
And so both are true. It sounds contradictory, but both are true. When we think of the assets and how this community, if those assets were tapped, could benefit the entire region, there is huge potential economically. And so I wanted to flag some of these opportunities that show up in the data. They're not all the pieces are tied to immigrants and refugees. So to begin, if we did not have racial gaps in income and unemployment, we would have an economic stimulus to the Portland metro region of more than $10 billion a year. This was data worked on by PolicyLink. If those employment and income levels were at the same levels as whites, this community would be in much stronger economic standing. The other piece is when we put income, if lower income people were able to earn living wages, that would in turn have a much greater stimulus effect on the economy than putting those money in the hands of the affluent. And they actually have a propensity to spend that money that's double what it is if that money is left in the hands of more affluent people. Newcomers typically generate high levels of small business. New data out talks about 3% in the Portland metro region, slightly slower than the U.S. born, but it shows a high degree of tenacity to be able to navigate some of this, the barriers that exist for moving into small business, whether it's loans, whether it's having assets in order to invest. So it's quite an admirable level to be close to that of the U.S. or of the U.S. born average. But we also know that these are levels that are nowhere near as high as many major metropolitan cities, which sometimes have more than twice the level of small business creation than we do in Portland. So in terms of looking at exemplars, we might turn our eyes to some of those cities. This is also a community, if they in turn are supported in building small business, are much more likely to hire other workers of color and much more likely to be working in new markets abroad. Minority-owned businesses are 2 times more likely to be involved in overseas production or exporting activities. And then the final piece I wanted to talk about a community where there are untapped assets. When that community is untapped by way of assets, they tend to be high unemployment, high poverty levels, and those in turn create a drag on the economy. And it's the idea that we then have to spend more in human services, in health services, incarceration, addiction. And there's data out of the US GAO that says that by not dealing with poverty, we actually lose 4% of our economic growth. And so these are hopefully arguments to build a larger set of allies to do this important inclusion work. And we wanted you to have some of these insights and some of the data that's been available. The new piece of data I want to share with you is the losing of a foothold that immigrants of color are experiencing in this region. So there are 2 slides related to this. And the first one, we are just looking at those that have been in the States for less than 10 years. And we were able to go back in a data set about 8 years ago. So close to a decade ago, our newcomers of color were able to make $14,500 a year. Today, those newcomers who have been here for about 10 years are only able to make $9,000 a year. Huge loss in economic capacity. At the same time as our white immigrants were actually at double the levels 8 years ago, they've increased their foothold economically to just shy of $50,000 a year. So there's a really deeply racialized dimension of what it means to be a newcomer economically today. At the same time, this is where this bipolar piece comes, I'm not talking about the mental health issue, I'm talking about the distribution of the population. It is a much more highly educated group. So this same group, in terms of immigrants of color, over that same time period, the same population group, have significantly improved to now 26% of that group has a bachelor's or higher level of degree compared to only 16%. So despite much higher incomes, losing an economic foothold, that's really dramatic. Very quickly, this is a community. I wanted to just show you that this region has 28% folks of color amongst our immigrant community. It is 72% people of color. So our immigrant community is much more likely to be folks of color. Now to some of the encouraging pieces. We've tracked in one of the chapters the policy history, to some degree promises made, promises broken. And we wanted to launch this with a real affirmation of the leadership of Tom Potter and the kinds of imprinting he has done for the newcomer community. His initiatives to build community policing agreements allowed for the emergence of culturally specific law enforcement units, done in deep partnership with communities. Communities very much want to see these initiatives rebuilt. He also launched the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program, created the Mayor's Office of Immigrant and Refugee, and opened City Hall to democracy in very practical ways. The community generally talks about then a period of relative silence, a real sense of erosion and a diminishment of those initiatives and others, until a real surge of enthusiasm today with a lot of affirmation for Mayor Hales' and Commissioner Fritz's contributions. Mayor Hales, is the way you have shown up has been deeply regarded, deeply appreciated. The resolution to stand in solidarity with the Muslim community as being a legitimate, important part of Portland's fabric is noted and valued very much so. And the support you've shown in moving this work into becoming a commission. And Commissioner Fritz the accolades are very significant. Your focus on the inclusion of immigrants and refugees in equity policy and equity practice is deeply affirmed. And another highlight is the extension of the Parks for New Portlanders program that is going to make a big difference in the lives of many newcomers. Finding six is a bit of a glimpse into these myths and myth-busting. In terms of immigrants and refugees being a terrorist threat, this is a group of the most highly vetted newcomers in the USA, or anybody coming to the USA. If you have any negative intentions around behavior in the US, the way to get in is not in claiming refugee status. That being a refugee means you typically go through a two-year validation process of your acceptability into the region. And no refugees and almost no immigrants have been charged with terrorism since 9/11. This is a group that is not a drain on public services. While these issues are dealt with more fully in the report, I just pulled out a couple of pieces to share today. Amongst undocumented workers, 50% of them pay payroll taxes and make contributions to services that they can never claim. They do not bring down the economy. If undocumented workers were removed from Oregon, we would lose economic activity in the level of $3.4 billion a year, and more than 19,000 jobs would be lost. And this is a group that are job creators as opposed to job takers, with immigrants being much more likely to start a new business than native-born Americans. The newcomer assets are palpable in so many ways. This is a group that has deep international experiences, different ways to live, different ways to organize, different ways to think about how to be and how to support each other. Out of necessity, often some of our most insightful innovators come from this community. The economic growth potential I've talked about already, and the importance for tapping into that optimism is a real opportunity for us. We've done a literature review around settlement and resettlement priorities, and not only, I won't read these through, but not all, they're very basic things such as learning English and getting healthcare supports, but it's also draws our attention to the importance of the welcome of the community to include and validate their role in civic life, in neighborhood life, in institutional life. So what we need is a welcoming and inclusive environment alongside supports for adaptation and improved supports for basic human needs. We've also want to draw your attention to an emerging international practice that's referred to as the Migrant Integration Policy Index. And we may, and this would be a piece to have dialogue with the commission about, establish a standard set of metrics to see how we're doing. And the metrics here include everything from how are kids doing in education to political participation levels, but also in terms of what's the degree of racial harassment, ethnic harassment that exists. And so if we could set a baseline and then look at our progress on those, not all of these are readily available, so we may need to think about either replacements or improvements in some of our data collection practices. But we do need a more nuanced, agreed-upon set of metrics where we can gauge progress over time. Shifting to recommendations. The core recommendation, and it's an emotional one, is that this community is asking for our political leaders to stand with them when the going gets tough. They want to know that they can rely on your defense of the community, of parts of the community, and want to know that you assert publicly, that you will assert publicly to their legitimacy in the fabric that is Portland. So when indignities are loaded onto the community, when wars and turmoil besiege newcomer families from their home community, when community members are spoken of in derogatory ways, the community wants and needs to know that you are reliable in terms of that stance. So while there have been these wonderful examples over the past few years, the community would like, the newcomer community very much wants to see that commitment, perhaps in policy and perhaps as well in an assured practice. Number two is to tackle the issue of how immigrants and refugees are seen more broadly. And so there's a vision for an awareness campaign around the assets that these communities bring to Portland. So that might do some myth busting more publicly, that might emphasize the capacity, that might share leaders' commitments, that identify the benefits for all. There's a vision of sort of a more public version of the private and commitments that we make at individual levels. We need culturally responsive services. So while cultural competency and racial equity are important pieces that are moving and palpably moving in city services, we now need to figure out how to make sure that our services are the highest quality they can be for immigrants and refugees. And we know through best practices that those services work in partnership, deep partnership, with those that have experience with our communities of color, with our immigrant and refugee communities. We also need to ensure that organizations are accessible to and inclusive of those being served, and that we're building the evidence base to be sure that these services and resources are working. We continue to need workforce supports. You've heard us speak before about recognizing foreign credentials. We're suggesting that creation of a task force to work across jurisdictions in partnership with communities to make sure that international experience and credentials are recognized and validated here. Our survey that we did back when we released the African report, we had close to half of Africans experience that their foreign credentials were not recognized in employment here. And final substantive slide, and then a highlight to finish with, is around housing access. The work that's moving on affordable housing is absolutely essential for this community. We also have an idea and suggest another task force, which would be to work with the housing code and the residency laws. There are many communities, many families are large in this community, and the occupancy challenges are a big issue, and we have heard numerous stories of people trying to hide how many children they had and not have them go out and play because the landlord might become aware of how many kids they have, and that would then risk eviction. So we're wondering and thinking that there are cultural norms embedded in some of the occupancy pieces that might be an important piece to revisit that might have a parallel, more immediate piece around housing affordability and stability that would be valued by the work by our newcomers. So the final slide I have for you today is a pretty interesting, very new study that's come out of Amnesty International, which has that, which finds ultimately in the U.S., and this is contrary to the public opinion and how much media attention anti-immigrant, anti-refugee sentiments exist. 63% of Americans want their governments to do more to help refugees. I'll draw your attention to the pie chart on the right.
Excuse me.
A subsequent question was asked of how would you want to welcome, what are the lengths you would go to welcome newcomers into refugees into your community? 15% of Americans said they would welcome refugees into their home. Further 27% into their neighborhood, 11% into your city, 18% into your country. Only 22% of Americans said we would not welcome them into our country. That's actually a very encouraging note to know that we've got public opinion on our side to be more assertive, inclusive, creative, and strategic. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. You know, I was just struck by a couple of things in your findings, the dichotomy between the educational credentials that a lot of New Portlanders bring with them and that fading economic situation. And on the other hand, a couple of your slides, and you mentioned this in passing, and so did Commissioner Fritz, about the engagement in civic life and political affairs. And one of the we keep citing these stories because thanks to the Advisory Council and to folks like Paulo Catalani, we've been getting folks from immigrant and refugee communities involved in the budget process and other ways in city government over the last few years. And it's been really striking that they get organized, they come, they make excellent presentations, and then they're influential. This cycle in particular, there was a really great grassroots effort about the World Cup soccer program that involved a lot of young people that played in the program, you know, participated in the program. And you know, we're all telling those stories. I think each of us, when we're out in the community, are telling these stories about how the political power and legitimate participation of all these new Portlanders is actually helping to steer city policy. So what a contrast between the fact you got these folks getting here, in many cases, well-qualified for all kinds of jobs, unemployment below 4%, booming economy, thousands more jobs than there were a year ago or a year before that. And yet these two challenges, particularly of credentials and housing, really being forces that are dragging people down when they actually have every reason to be rising. You know, they're more influential. They've got, as you say, your survey shows, I bet Portlanders might even exceed that pie chart from what I've seen. You know, I bet it'd be hard to find that 22% in Portland. But at any rate, most Portlanders say, this is great. We want these folks to be welcomed here. We're going to go out of our way personally to help do that. You know, and yet, you know, economically, because of housing prices and because of, in some cases, the credentials problem, people aren't getting that hand on the ladder. This is really useful. I think this document is going to be very influential for us as policymakers and for a lot of other people. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Ann Curry Stevens, for affirming with tremendous clarity both the dignity and the value of our communities. We're going to shift, with your permission, to inviting two additional guests who are going to talk to us about that newcomer experience in Portland. And so it is my pleasure to invite Tok and Dabdi to come up and join me here. And they're going to share, again, their experience in newcomer communities. Tok Sunalei Gillespie is the Refugee and Resettlement Manager. Did I get that right? With Catholic Charities, and Abdi Musa is the Somali Educational Initiative Manager with Portland Public Schools, I believe. Welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Who's going to start?
Ladies first.
Okay, Tokyo.
A smart man.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Hales, and Commissioner Fish. I apologize. I all of a sudden got really intimidated.
Don't be. I've never seen you be intimidated, so this is
I'm here.
Thank you.
And a licensed therapist, so you just let me know.
So again, my name is Tok Sunalei Gillespie, and I'm have the privilege of being the director of refugee resettlement at Catholic Charities. As we talk today about immigrants and refugees, I'd really like to talk a little bit about the refugee piece, because oftentimes this is a population that is invisible. Every week, refugee resettlement programs are welcoming refugees to the city of Portland. I'd like to thank Mayor Hales for being with us at the airport at one of the arrivals. That was really, really important, not only to us, but to the family and to the city. Our newest community members are arriving to us from countries, oh my goodness, coming to us from Afghanistan and Myanmar and Iraq, Somalia, and other war-torn countries. As refugees, they arrived with all the rights and responsibilities as you and I have, except for the right to vote. Refugees are expected to immediately integrate into our very complex society and bureaucracy. Even having experienced trauma, losing homes, losing families, many of them come wounded.
on a national level, with Congress increasing refugee ceiling to 85,000, we are being asked to increase our numbers of welcoming refugees, and that's going to impact our city. As a former refugee, I know far too well what happens when a city and a community sees you, believes in you, and takes a chance on you and give you those opportunities. I am the product of a city and a community that has elevated me to be in the position that I'm in now. My story, my journey, involved uncertainty, doubt. Even as I sit here in front of you and get so intimidated because you do have so much power and privilege and access. Sacrifices are what's part of my journey. Resilience and triumph. This is a journey that resonates with the faces of many of these people standing behind me and next to me and who continue to lift me up. As you make decisions, whether it's about this ordinance or not, I ask that you remember our faces and our contributions that we've made to this city. So thank you.
Well, Doc, I'm sorry you felt intimidated, but let me tell you that you're not only, you shouldn't be intimidated, but you're actually inspiring because one of my young staff members who's an attorney was talking to you the other day, and he got so inspired by the story about the one-day event with lawyers to help people get through the paperwork that he wanted to volunteer for that. So you inspired him on the spot.
Thank you for being here today. Could you just tell folks at home how much assistance do refugees get? You said they are required to integrate pretty much from day one. How much assistance, how long is it that the federal government, who provides the assistance?
Our wonderful Department of State, in collaboration with Office of Refugee Resettlement. So for the initial Department of State portion, it is 90 days. And then here in Oregon, we provide services to our refugees for a period of 8 months.
So that's just 90 days from the federal government, then the citizens of Oregon provide up to 8 months of housing assistance, and then after that, folks are pretty much on their own?
8 months.
8 months.
Is really what our resettlement offices do here in Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that people think that it's an ongoing for years that people are getting assistance. And if you think, when I think about how challenging it was for me to come here, and I have the skin that I'm in, and I speak English, which is very similar to American. For folks to come here who don't speak any words in English and to then have the challenge of, after only 8 months, expected to be by themselves, that is astonishing, and I don't think most people recognize that. So thank you for the work that you do in helping provide that community and that helping hand to just get started in this country.
May I add to what you said, Commissioner Fritz? While we as resettlement agencies are doing the work, it is really the community. There's no way, and I'm not just saying this because I'm sitting in City Hall. Refugee resettlement is a public-private partnership. That's why it was designed. And we have to integrate not only our newest community members to the services, but to the people. And that's how we know that if the community itself can walk alongside our newest community members, that's where triumph comes from. It's not from the resettlement agencies. So thank you for mentioning that.
And if somebody wants to get involved, for instance, Dr. Curry Stevens showed us that 15% of Americans say that they would welcome somebody into their home. How could they contact you or other services to say, I'd like to help?
They could go to our website.
And that is? CatholicCharities.org?
CatholicCharitiesOregon.org, but also our brothers and sisters over at Lutheran Community Services Northwest and Ecumenical Services, SOAR. Those are the three resettlement agencies here in Oregon. And I hesitated because I didn't think that it was appropriate to mention names. I didn't think we should name drop here.
That's okay. So. We do it all the time.
There are people out there who just want to help, so I appreciate. And you're right, you name-dropped three that are some of our most prominent partners. There are others, too.
And if
Thank
people
you very
want
much.
To volunteer as attorneys to work at the next, or as translators to work at the next one-day amazing...
Refugee Adjustment Day?
Refugee Adjustment Day. I knew it had a title, but I just call it wonderful. And that's... do you remember the date?
I guess I will publicly announce it. It's July 30th,
okay,
Saturday.
So if they're interested in being available July 30th, they can go to that same website and get in touch with you and volunteer, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It's okay. We get to promote good causes here, so it's
thank
all right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Takumsin.
Well, thank you. My name is Mr. Abdi Musay. Just piggybacking on what she just said, basically, about the communities and coming as immigrant refugees and the conversation that was going on over here. It just reminds me in 2001 when the city hired basically a full-time or part-timer as a refugee liaison person. I recall vividly when all of a sudden the city, for some reason, there was a budget cutting and they decided to let go of that person. That was 2001. And we just heard the information. We felt like, wow, it's high time we need to go out there as immigrant refugee populations to support some, and show some kind of a solidarity. So that was 2001, basically. Fast forward 2016, I think this is a huge success. Where we were, where we are at right now, what's about to happen, basically, in terms of establishing a new commission, basically, that is specifically helping this population. I really appreciated the opportunity, and also your hardworking in making this happen. Back to the Somali community in general, basically, where, by the way, I've been working with all kinds of immigrant refugee populations throughout in my life for the past 16 years here in Portland, Oregon. In the Somali community, particularly lately, we have learned that basically there was a report that has been released under the initiative of the community for the first time, after the community has been asking a lot about the Portland Public School and the performance of their children. Finally, they have released a self-reported data that pointed out that, for example, only 7% of Somalis were passing the state math test, 7%. 17% were only passing the state reading test. I think, and on top of that, you had basically the attendance rate, which is about 93% of all Somalis being there. So what you see is students who are motivated being there, but at the same time, the system unfortunately somehow failed them. I'm glad to point out that, Portland basically public school is working with us. They have realized basically this hasn't been working for the community. It's an immigrant refugee population from diverse, coming from diverse, walks of life and different parts of the world. And they have had a challenge with them, and they're working with us, really. But this should have been basically news, should have been basically highlighted. And this is what basically has galvanized the community and put them together under one roof. And as a result of that, they form a Somali task force that is currently working with Portland Public School, other jurisdictions as well as the state. And we're looking forward to remedy some of those issues. That is only the education piece of it. When you look at the unemployment, it's just the highest because the community, according to Oregonians, the Somalis over here in Oregon are estimated between 10 to 12,000 of them, and primarily they live in the tri-county areas. They're very, most of them basically, they're multilingual folks, and they speak multiple languages. And they really they have that entrepreneurial spirit of starting a new business, but unfortunately the system has been extremely difficult and challenging for them to start that because lack of opportunity, institutionalized racism, if you like. And I can give you a case in point. A couple of months ago, a family that we were helping wanted to rent a house. We called the apartment, our manager, and he said, "Well, we have a 3 bedrooms over there ready for you. Come over here and take a look at it." So we asked the family to go over there and visit the house. They went there, and they were told the house is not available. Asked it why. They said, "Because of the way I looked, the way I dressed, the way I spoke to them. Probably that's what I've basically, turned them down. And that's why we haven't been able to successfully, get the house." On another note, we know a lot of members of our community who have tried multiple times to get a loan so that they can start businesses. They have not been successful, unfortunately. So we're experiencing a triple constraint, what's called lately in prior to 9/11, Somalis only were just blacks and immigrants. But now you have another added layer of challenge, which basically being a Muslim as well. We just happens to be the largest black Muslim community in Oregon. We're the largest black, you know, community after African Americans living right here in Oregon, basically. But so far, if you go out somewhere, anywhere, any direction within the city, you won't find basically three or four or five thriving business, you know, Somali-owned businesses basically thriving. It's been extremely challenging, very difficult, and I hope basically the commission will address some of those challenges and find some kind of solution. It reminds me, I think a couple of years ago when Sam was over here, he invited us over, community leaders, and when he was hosting the other mayor's cities, you know, visiting over here, and he, I think one of the mayors came from Twin Cities, Minnesota, and he said, well, this gentleman has been overseeing a lot of Somalis who moved over that part of the world, and let's pick up his brain and, you know, how they thrive, how they succeeded, so that we can replicate some of those successful programs that they have implemented over there. And they shared with us a very fascinating story, and the story goes that when Somalis started going to Minnesota in late, you know, 90s, a lot of business owners and the public basically get together. Just as you pointed out, it's about partnership and public basically working together. They put an interesting, you know, program for the community because they realized those folks have a lot of potential in terms of bilingual, in terms of starting new businesses, in terms of basically investment. And now Somali communities in Minnesota basically contribute to local economy $500 million a year. And they pay $75 million taxes basically to the coffers of the state basically. And I was wondering basically how do we replicate that success basically story over here basically. Thank you very much for affording me this opportunity to talk to you in front of you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want you to know that that collaboration with other cities continues. Actually, I was meeting with Mayor Hodges from Minneapolis two nights ago, and so we have tried to learn from what they've done well and vice versa. And actually, another good thing that's happening on that level is that along with Mayor Kenney from Philadelphia and Mayor Stanton from Phoenix, I'm co-sponsoring a resolution at the next U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting next month urging comprehensive immigration reform because the cities of the country believe that that's what our communities need. So the mayors are continuing to both learn from each other and to try to support good public policy at the national level, again, inspired by and encouraged by the people in our cities. Thank you.
Thank you both. Next, we're going to invite some of our partners who exemplify, I think, some best practices of how we partner together with living out that idea of equity and in collective partnership arrangements. I want to invite Jennifer Devlin, Esmeralda Sanchez, and Arlene Kimura to join us up here, and I'll vacate the seat so you can, but please share with us more of your wonderful work, and look forward to hearing.
Thank you, Alberto.
Good afternoon, welcome.
Thank you, good afternoon. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fish, and Commissioner Fritz, thank you so much for moving this work along. We do have a little PowerPoint in there somewhere. My name is Jennifer Devlin, and you all know that I'm staff with the Bureau of Environmental Services, and that my job is to work on city projects to do environmental restoration, stream restoration, but also to do green infrastructure project in neighborhoods. And the other part of my work is to run a grants program to encourage all Portlanders to do watershed projects in their neighborhoods. Because best watershed management includes having everyone prevent pollution and to do restoration projects, reaching out to each and every Portlander is an important part of the success of our watershed projects.
Hello, everyone. My name is Marla Sanchez. I come from the Indigenous Studies program at Portland State. I'm an intern at BES with the Community Watershed Stewardship Program. My role in QISP is the grant coordinator. and it has been by far the best experience I've had working with creative, diverse residents in Portland. So it's been really great. I'm happy.
Great. So in 2011, BES staff and interns from Portland State sought input and advice from the city's New Portlander program. And let's see here. Together, we developed promising practices for our program, and we also developed an assessment tool to track our progress in reaching different members of Portland. To better understand the needs of the immigrant community and to build on previous efforts to consider equity in our grants, we met with Polo Katlani, and primary feedback from him and his community to improve service to New Portlander populations was that our program hadn't made underserved community leaders aware of the grant and hadn't made the underserved community leaders aware of how the grant could actually serve their specific community needs, such as engaging youth in productive activities, building a sense of place in communities, and familiarizing the immigrant communities with Portland's natural areas. Our follow-up actions included cross-education between the Portland Newcomers program staff and our staff to learn about what are watershed projects and what are the needs of the immigrant community. We also met with community leaders from ERCO and other venues to initiate discussions on how our grants might serve their communities. And we also include New Portlander program staff on our grant selection committee so that we could really institutionalize the preference for projects that were the most inclusive. And we have ongoing meetings with New Portlander community leaders to develop further ideas for funding.
The QUIS program has learned much from the collaborations with New Portlander program. Through these grant projects, St. Mary Ethiopian Orthodox Church, parking lot, stormwater retrofit, Russian Speaking Networks of Oregon, Naturescaping for a Better Environment program, Zami Community, Youth Gardens and Watershed Project, African Youth Community Organization Watershed Team, Oregon Bhutanese Community Organization Community Gardens and Johnson Creek cleanup, Iraq Society of Oregon, Mento, excuse me for mispronouncing this maybe,
Mesopotamians. We have a lot to learn from the Iraqi Society.
On the banks of the Willamette, the BS Community Watershed Stewardship Program looks forward to continue BS and PSU partnership with the New Portlanders program through the Policy Commission.
Thank you to everybody in the room. Has really enriched our work and made our program better.
Thank you, everybody. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz, thank you. I have a little piece of work that I do in East Portland called mobile playgrounds. And our children do not normally have developed parks to play in. And so about 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, we said, well, how can we do this better? And it turned out the Parks Bureau has for 105 years done a mobile playground, but they've never come out to East Portland. So we worked with them diligently, and they were a little bit stunned at the amount of energy that went into it. But they finally agreed. They said, okay, you guys can have mobile playgrounds, but you have to raise money. And I agreed, I'll raise the money for a little bit of time, but you guys have to institutionalize it. The other thing we did was say, hire our kids. Your playground staff needs to look like our children. So we worked with them on changing their hiring practices for seasonal help. You don't need a recreation degree to toss a ball around. You do need some ability and maturity to drive a van and to manage a lot of kids. As a result of working with them over the years, last year there were 197 seasonal applications for the playground program, and 71 of those applicants spoke another language, and they hired 28%. We are very excited about that changing demographics. We also moved a couple of our playground programs to full-time, 5 days a week, with lunches. And we continue to work with them on alternative sites where there are children gathering that need the services that Parks Bureau provides. And the offshoot of it has been some Sabetes, New Portlanders, Parks for New Portlanders World Cup Soccer. And that's a collaboration between other segments of the community and a bureau that was pretty entrenched in doing things the same old way until we came along and they said, maybe we ought to do